And it's on. Hey, good morning. This is Sharon Lee Sabata, podcast host of Middle Finger Happiness, Work Hard, Live Well, Don't Fuck With Me. Same title of my book on Amazon. And also another one I called It's a New Day, Don't Be a Shithead. It's kind of like a Dr. Seuss book for grown-ups. And it was dedicated to my dad. My dad's an awesome guy. So yeah, that was to him. And then the little book of Startup Inspiration. But I'm sitting here with somebody. We've had a really awesome conversation.
We have.
I need to do like a pre-session or behind the scenes. So
that would be a good idea.
It would be a great idea. And I have none other than Sol. And I want to make sure I say it. Salgado.
Salgado, correct.
And Sol, what is your title? Your medical title.
Okay, so I have a master's in counseling, okay. And my official kind of letter is alphabet soup. I'm a licensed professional counselor and a national certified counselor as well.
Ooh, so how'd you get nationally certified?
It's just part of like the test we take. It's a national test, so everybody that's a counselor has to take that same test. So
wow.
Once you get past the test, you can get nationally certified.
Well, girl, I'm so thrilled you're here. I mean, the topics we're going to talk about are amazing. And I'm going to tell you straight up, I'm going to want you back probably in December. And I'll tell you why, because December kicks in a lot of the topics that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy in last December, because my podcast will be a year old in December. And he's a pharmaceutical professor at University of Houston. And he also works as he prescribes medicine for depression, anxiety.
Okay.
So it was a real interesting conversation. But for some reason, those are good topics to help people.
They're needed topics.
Oh my
God.
Don't
talk about them enough.
We don't. So just to give you a heads up, what's today? Today's Friday. The sun is out, but you wouldn't know it an hour ago. It was pouring rain. It looked like freaking Imelda was showing her ass up again.
Flood. She's like, I'm back.
I'm back, bitches. And it was like, I couldn't even, the windshield wipers were useless.
They weren't helping.
No. And then I know I shouldn't have done it, but I was texting, hey, I'm 7 minutes away, and everything that could go wrong this morning went, I would say it went wrong. You know what? You just have to go with the flow. Take some U-turns.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
And can I let them know you are working on a podcast?
I am working on a podcast.
It's called Oi, Let's Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you were thinking, the subtitle is Demystifying Taboo Topics, Life and Mental Health.
Yes.
Okay. So here we go. Who are you and what do you do?
Okay. I'm a bilingual counselor here in Houston, Texas. I have a private practice in North Houston. It's called Soul Counseling and Healing. Mm-hmm. And I started that in January. So slowly picking up. I also do immigration evaluations and individual counseling. So those are my two main focuses.
Okay, so Soul Counseling and Healing. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the podcast, I always ask, you know, where they can find you, websites, all that other stuff. And then you also do immigration
evaluations.
Evaluation. Can you tell us about that?
So there's different types of evaluations. There's the hardship evaluation when people, it's called el perdón. They apply for a perdón. So whoever the spouse is or the family member doesn't have to wait for their documents in whatever country of origin they're from. So I do an evaluation of what the hardship would be to that U.S. citizen or permanent resident. And then you have the asylum to see how asylum has affected a person, or the U visa or VAWA, which is a Violence Against Women's Act. So there's, for example, if a woman doesn't have a status and she's a victim of domestic violence, a sexual assault, she can apply for the Women's Against Victims Act.
Oh, wow.
And it's a process where there can become legal if they have like a police report and they file charges. So they have this protection.
The documentation so that they can actually have the protection against the
Perpetrator.
Anyway, it's funny, we were talking, we talked a lot about mental health, and we were talking about what starts it, and you mentioned something that I think everybody needs to know. When you're a kid, when you're a child, I mean, we don't have any control over the landscape that we're being raised.
Yeah.
It is what it is, whether it's good or bad. But as we get older, we can make choices and we can actually cut off toxic people.
Yeah.
So I want you to share a little bit, like you were saying, you know, when you're little and you go through something that's shitty, how do you get to that place as a grown-up where you're like, you know, I need some help. I need to see a counselor.
Mm-hmm. So it requires a lot of strength. Because a lot of people say, oh, people that go to counseling, they're weak. That's why they're in counseling. It requires a lot of strength and courage to go see a stranger and tell them about your life and your issues and your trauma.
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, that's the person that's the stronger in the relationship is the one that went to ask for help.
Yes, because it's so hard to ask for help because you want everybody to think, oh, I'm a strong person. I'm able to do it all on my own.
Mm-mm.
And it is very hard. I have an issue asking for help. And it's like, okay, Marisol, you know, you need to ask for help.
Like, why is that we're like that? Because I'm like that for something. That's like, we're like, yeah, YouTube is my best friend.
Yeah.
We're just YouTube it. I'm going to find my counselor on YouTube. I mean, but you can find some good stuff on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I actually subscribe to a couple of therapists on YouTube. But why is it that we're like that?
I have no idea. I think it's just that.
Cabrona.
Soy chingona y nadie más decir nada más.
No más de más, right. You're like, that's it. But
yeah.
Is that just DNA or what
I
do you
think? I think that's, it's us being human. We don't want anybody to see us vulnerable. That's the issue.
Yes.
Vulnerability is so hard to display. We don't want anybody, because when you become vulnerable, you're kind of letting your shield down and being open to attacks. But that doesn't mean that people will do that.
No. So. Yeah. We were just talking to a friend of mine actually last night, and I had to make some decisions about how not everybody's invited to your world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking up on that more and more on weekly.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not everybody can come into your circle.
Yeah. Their vibe's not on the same level.
No. And then if you let them know in a certain way, they get pissed.
And that's okay. That's their feeling.
It's
not yours.
It's not my feeling. Especially if you know they're cray-cray. You're like, you're definitely not invited to this party. So we talked about also what made you become a counselor. Because I asked you that out in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell the listeners, like, what made you go into this field?
So going into this field, when I was a child, I have a lot of, like, trauma and just issues that I went through, and there was nobody to help me. And like, we looked for help, we went to the school counselor, and it was like a dead end. So there was really nothing at that time. So went on to get my bachelor's in psychology, and I was like, okay, I can do this. This is something I could do. And I went to therapy, and it sucked. But I don't think it was a therapist's fault. It was a male, a white straight male. So there was nothing that could connect us. I was telling him my story, and I was like, no, you don't understand my family, blah, 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 the culture. And he was like, well, you just need to move out. I was like, it doesn't work like that. So I just felt very disconnected, like they didn't understand.
So he wasn't a bad counselor, he just wasn't the counselor.
Yeah, he wasn't the counselor. So
for you. Yeah.
So that's why I say I don't think it was a therapist's fault.
Right.
It was just we weren't on the same page. So when that happened, finished my bachelor's degree, went to work at a women's shelter. So I was a sexual assault and domestic violence caseworker. And my clients would need counseling, and I was trying to refer them, and because I'm bilingual, I got all the Spanish speakers.
Right.
There was nowhere to send them.
Yeah, it's a flat field right
now.
Yeah.
So there was nowhere to send them because they needed somebody that spoke Spanish. Translation and therapy is not the best. You lose a lot of like the therapeutic process in translation, because I've done therapy where I needed a translator. I think when I was working somewhere and some of my clients only spoke Punjabi, so we'll use a translator, and I know like some of the stuff was lost. I was like, I know the translator is not saying what I need him to say.
Oh my God.
Or I know that they're not expressing what my client's saying because I could see their body language and facial expressions. I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
Oh God.
So their translation is lost. And then I was like, okay, I can do this. I can go back to school and become that counselor because it's something I like to do.
So you saw something missing.
Yes.
And then you went and filled that void.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like to bring this as a little nugget. That's calling the white space.
Mm-hmm.
So the white space in your industry, whether any industry, you found the white space that was missing. There's the room for opportunity. And so that's when you went and got your master's.
Yeah. So, and now I became the bilingual counselor. About 95% of my clients are Spanish speakers. So I do have a couple of English speakers, usually the teenagers, the mom speaks Spanish only, and they bring their kids. And they say, well, I can't go to the English speaking counselor because we can't communicate and I don't know what's going on. And I want to help them. That's what I'm bringing them. So they come to me. I'm like, okay, we'll have like the parent sessions. And I'm like, this is what we're working on. So that helps the mom or the dad help their child to move on.
Oh, yeah. And what is the difference between, because my neighbor here in my studio, there's a lot of studios here, she's a therapist. So there's a therapist, a counselor, a psychologist, and what's the other one?
Psychiatrist.
So kind of explain to this, to the audience, like...
The difference,
because everybody's like, oh, you know, a therapy is a therapy is a therapy. And I was like, no, there's different ones for different things and what they do.
Okay, so there's a lot of different licenses. So we have a licensed professional counselor, which is what I am. And I provide counseling and therapy is synonymous. It's the same thing. Then you have a licensed clinical social worker, and they're able to provide therapy as well. Then you have a licensed marriage and family therapist. And they specialize more in family and couples.
Okay.
Then you have the psychologist. A psychologist, they focus more on assessments. Like, they're the ones that do assessments for ADHD.
Okay, got it, yeah.
Other kind of diagnosis.
Diagnose the problem, okay.
Yeah.
And they also prescribe medicine.
Not psychologist.
Oh, no, it's the psychiatrist does.
So, a psychiatrist is a MD, is a doctor.
Right.
So they went to medical school and they're able to prescribe medication. I have a lot of clients that come to me like, oh, can you prescribe medication? I'm like, no, I can't prescribe medication. You need to go to actual medical doctor for that.
Mm-hmm. And then they refer you to a psychiatrist from there. So it's a couple of steps to get there. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, when I had my baby, my last one, he's not a baby, he's 11. It was the first time that I experienced postpartum depression. And I remember my doctor telling me, you know, I can get you on, I think it was Xanax.
Xanax for anxiety?
For anxiety. I just wasn't, I don't know, always hormones, man. I was an older mom. So it was like, oh, I just hated everything. And not that I was a danger to anyone. I was not a danger to myself or anyone. I was just in a funk. Like just, I don't know, you know, it's like a melted ice cube on a hot sidewalk. You could just, you know.
Well, your body went through a big trauma.
It did. You know, it's a lot of, people don't realize it's a lot, you know.
It is a lot. Your organs get shifted and you're in so much pain and
like,
hormones.
It was crazy. Somebody said, oh, your body is a temple. I'm like, no, mine was a subleased apartment and I got the walls kicked in and the sheetrock has got cracks in it. But I remember her telling me, you know, you want some medicine for it. And when she heard that, you want some medicine, it was almost like, you want some coffee? And so I was on it for 6 weeks. And in those 6 weeks, and it took literally about 3 days to feel it. And then when I could feel it, I was a zombie. And this was the lowest dosage she could give me. I was like, whatever, the house is on fire. Okay, I mean, I was numb. I was just like a walking zombie. And so I took myself off of it. And I don't know if I should have, but I just dealt with it.
See, here's the thing with psychotropic medication. You have to keep going to the psychiatrist or whoever prescribed it so they can adjust the dose. So it's has to be kind of like a cocktail specific to you. Because what works for somebody else is not going to work for you because you are two different people.
Right.
And that's when people are like, well, I drank it and it gave me all these things, side effects. I'm like, okay, have you tried something else? And when you're dealing with depression or anxiety or some type of mental health, especially like depression, a lot of people don't want to take medication for it.
Right.
And that's okay, but to a certain point. Because what I tell my clients is, when you're taking antidepressants, sometimes your body needs it because the chemical imbalance is not something that you can fix on your own.
Right.
That's when it's like severe depression where you can't get out of bed, you can't even go to take a shower, you're not eating. So it's like really down. Yeah. But if you have depression where it's kind of something mild, okay, come to counseling and let's work on it.
Sometimes just the talking. You know, and we have like wires in our body, like an amazing highway. And I'm not a therapist, of course, but correct me if I'm wrong. So these highways, these neurons, these mm-hmm. patterns, and then some of them get frayed, like your tennis shoe. You know how the little plastic tip mm-hmm. on your tennis shoe, if you take it off, the end of the shoelace kind of goes like yeah. that because it's been used over and over. Mm-hmm. Does that happen to us in our brain, in our the wiring?
I'm not a neurobiologist.
Okay.
Which is person with the brain. But what does happen with our neurons in that highway you're talking about, some of our brain, if we don't use it, is called attrition, I think.
Yes.
And kind of that cell dies. Because you're not using it, so the brain's like, I need space for other things.
Right.
And also sometimes our brain kind of forgets and is not sending the chemicals it needs to send.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lack of those hormones and chemicals. So if you have a lack, whatever you do is not going to help.
True. And that's why I tell people they need some type of outlet of therapy, whether it be art
mm-hmm.
or running or yoga or woodworking or, mm-hmm. I mean, just any type of creativity that kicks that little wire that's been dead,
mm-hmm.
it jumpstarts it again.
Yeah, because we don't live in a world where they tell you it's okay to be creative.
No, it's like work, 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 pay bills, come home.
Yeah.
Okay, cook dinner. Okay, King of Thrones. Okay, HBO. Okay, brush your teeth, go to bed. Oh, homework. I mean, we're like little robots mm-hmm. sometimes. So I know for us, we don't have cable. We pick and choose what we want to watch, mm-hmm. which is much better.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that, Fox News going on.
Oh, I stopped watching Fox News when I was in college because...
Girl, it's been 8 years for me since I've watched the news.
Yeah,
I hate it.
It puts nothing but negative things out there. There's nothing positive.
You know, and I went to my brother's house. Oh my God, brother, I'm gonna spill the beans. He has Fox News on all the time. That's just And I was there. It was just for the weekend to enjoy mm-hmm. the weekend. And it's after about 4 hours, I'm like, dude, change the channel. And it was affecting me. I don't know mm-hmm. if I'm more sensitive to it, but for some people, what is it? They want to hear that news. They mm-hmm. do they not realize it affects their thinking?
Yeah, because it makes you think the world's not a safe place. Because all they do is so-and-so got murdered. There was a shooting here. There's this there. It was just all these negative stuff.
It's and I know because he went to school. But I went to school for communications and journalism. It's called sensationalism,
mm-hmm.
and it sells. They want your ass glued to the couch, and they want you to see that car crash over and mm-hmm. over and over again, or that flooding over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and that will mess. That'll fuck with your head.
Yeah, it desensitizes you to certain things because you're like, oh, that's normal, but it's not because yes, these things do happen.
Right.
But it's not like it happens. Everywhere. It's in certain places.
This is crazy. Well, I wanted to circle back around to, because you really brought an aha for me, the Violence Against Women's Act.
Mm-hmm.
So when did that start? I mean, because I've never heard of that.
It's been in effect for years. I don't know exactly when it started.
And why don't we hear about it more often? I mean, I guess it's just something I wouldn't be exposed to, but...
I don't know why we don't hear about it, but... People don't talk about it, just lack of knowledge. I didn't know about it until I started working in the women's shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I know about it. And I always tell my clients, I say I work with mainly Spanish speakers, and the majority of them are immigrants. They always tell me, I can't leave my husband because he could put me in jail. Because did you know, and this is something I did not know, in Mexico, they can charge you with abandono de hogar.
¿Qué es eso? What is that?
That is you abandon your home. So they can charge you for leaving your husband and put you in jail.
Okay, so you're leaving a motherfucker who's hurting you
mm-hmm.
and it's considered that you're abandoning, I can't even say it in English.
Abandoning?
Abandoning.
Mm-hmm. Your home.
Your home.
So you could be charged with that in Latin America. And I did not know that until all these women started telling me. So they were afraid of I know I need to leave, but I can't because they're going to charge me with this. So I had to kind of provide them with some education. I was like, no, you're in the United States. That doesn't happen here. You have rights. You're protected. And you kind of explain to them the Violence Against Women's Act and how they can try to apply for status through that.
Can you tell us in Spanish, in Espanol, cómo se dice Violence Against Women's Act? I mean, how would you explain that to somebody?
It would be el acta de de protección de violencia contra la mujer.
Okay, got it. Yeah, and there's a lack of education and knowledge on that.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons, I mean, I wanted to bring you on for lots of reasons, but as a therapist, we touched on the telephone. We had a phone call before a couple of weeks ago. So what? Why is it, and we're dealing more with the Latino community, although this could be for any, humans are humans.
Yeah.
Why is it that we, in the Latino culture, there's this stigma of, you know, oh, you're going to therapy. Like, they're going to look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm broken. I need to get fixed. My head's not on right. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to admit that.
You know, there's a couple of things. So one, when I started going to school for psychology and then counseling, people told me, it's because you're going to work with crazy people. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm going to work with people that have everyday problems and live life. So I like to tell people, if you go to counseling, counselors do not deal with crazy people. We deal with people that just go through regular life things. And one of the reasons I think that it's so stigmatized in the Latino community, which is kind of the what I specialize in, because I'm bilingual.
Right.
The majority of my clients are Latino. So one of the reasons is because it's not something we're exposed to. Like, I didn't know counselors existed until, like, I got older.
Yeah. Because nobody went to counseling in our family.
No.
You went to barbecue and you drank beer.
Or you went to the priest.
You went to the priest, or you went to your comadre's house and you talked and you cried and then you went home. And it was.
It's not kind of traditional. It's more of a Western thing. Right. But what I've noticed is that we've dealt with mental health and depression in other ways, which are similar to counseling. Traditional healing, like los curanderos.
Yeah.
So I was watching...
Okay, curandero, tell the English speakers what
okay,
that is.
Okay, so curandero is like a traditional healer, like a shaman.
Like a shaman.
Yeah.
So not like voodoo.
Not like voodoo.
Not like New Orleans.
they have shamans there too.
They have shamans too. I've been to one, so yeah.
So I was watching one of their healing rituals, and while I was hearing them, I was like, oh, they're doing grounding work. Oh, they're working on trauma. So doing a lot of things I do, but in a traditional sense.
Okay.
And I was just mind blown. It's something I've grown up with, like
you don't realize that there is ojo. As a matter of fact, I experienced ojo this week.
I still believe in it. I was like, if I'm feeling like this negative vibe and I just can't get rid of a headache, I'm like, tengo ojo. Let me do something. Let me do the cleansing with the egg.
It's so true. I was given a compliment on something, and the person that gave me the compliment, it wasn't a sincere compliment. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Something happened. The evil eye. For those of you who don't, you're probably thinking, okay, we're not going to listen to this no more. But no, it just exists. Mm-hmm. Or it's karma. I guess you could call it karma.
Yeah.
So when you mentioned the word grounding, I don't know if this is the same kind of grounding, but for people that know me, I'm always barefooted, especially in my studio. This is cement floor.
Mm-hmm.
Cement has energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I do run barefooted, and actually just being barefooted in regular outside in grass in the dirt. That's the best. And you know what? This is really going to sound crazy. My audience is getting to know, Sharon's a little bit different. I know I'm a little different. But when I'm having a really shitty day, sometimes I will get a cold beer, or sometimes I'll just get a cup of coffee. They're working on something outside, guys. Or a cup of coffee and take my shoes off and just stand on my cement outside with the dogs and you just feel, and walk in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do?
I think it's grounding. What is it? Connects you, it could just connects you and it reminds you where you're at, because sometimes we're either living in the past or we're living in the future worrying about tomorrow, and that kind of just centers you and says, okay, I'm right here right now, what can I do right now? Because we can't control what happened in the past. We have some control over the future, but there's too many kind of extenuating factors that we don't have control over.
Right.
But what we can do is focus on right now and let me see what I can do this moment.
I'm always having to remind myself that, because I'm going in 100 directions. And for somebody, I don't know, how do you deal with clients who have like tons of energy and they just can't why meditation is important to me, mm-hmm. or running is important to me. So do you recommend those things for people?
Definitely. Meditating and just kind of centering yourself and just taking a moment to just quiet everything.
And how do you do it when you can't? There's so much noise in your head. Because I'm really putting you on the spot. Because I'm like, okay, she's a counselor. She would help tell somebody. And they say, hey, Dr. Soul, I can't do this. What's going on? I can't, you know, I'm sitting there with my thoughts and it's, you know, you shut it off.
I'm not a doctor yet.
Well, I know,
but they do call me Dr. Soul.
Dr. Soul.
So what I do, I have to teach my clients. Well, sometimes it's like a session and we'll sit there and I'm like, okay, let's breathe. Tell me, because everybody knows deep breathing, right?
Oh, breathing,
or yeah. Or they'll have the concept of it. And I'm like, show me how you deep breathe. And they're like, and I'm like, no, it's not like that. Kind of like that, but let me walk you through it. So I'll do the counting and we'll just, and they're like, I can't do it. I'm like, just focus on the numbers, focus on my voice. And they're like, my voice is going. And there's like in my head, I'm like, they come, whatever's coming through here, just don't focus on it. Let it go. Like, let it pass by. And then we'll do the deep breathing and we'll probably do about 10 minutes or less.
Well, I read an article that we're the most shallowest breathers in the U.S. I don't know why. It was just, I can't remember what. I think a lot of people, not just the U.S. It was an old article. This was like 10 years ago. And I have one of these brains like an elephant. You can tell me something and I will remember it forever. Mm-hmm. But I remember reading that. You know, when you're a shallow breather, I mean, you just don't make good decisions. So you're getting that oxygen again in your brain. Mm-hmm. And that's important.
Yeah. A lot of my clients tell me, I feel crazy. I'm like, because your oxygen's getting in the brain. Like, your brain is getting oxygen.
You're making yourself high. It's a natural. Why do you think they have the runner's high? Because when you're running, you're like, you're breathing.
Yeah.
And you're just getting that oxygen in your brain. Oxygen is a beautiful thing. And I think we need to. So I always tell my kid when he's having a little bit of a meltdown, because we all have, I'm like, hey, people, slow down and breathe. And he's like, okay. So he's learned to do that. And it's just kind of like, I don't know, is it medicine?
You know, our body has the ability to heal. So our body has endorphins, natural endorphins. So we're kind of activating that. And you're telling your body, it's okay, there's nothing wrong. Because when we have like that high energy and we feel stressed, you know, stress and cortisol are silent killers.
Yes.
So when we're in like always in that state, our body like
fights.
Yeah. So you have to tell your body, hey, I know your perception is something, but this is what's really going on. And through deep breathing and meditation, you're telling your body, everything's fine, we're not in danger, calm down, and kind of regulating yourself.
But how do you tell this to someone who is, you know, when they leave your office, mm-hmm. they got to go back home to the shitty place. Mm-hmm. They just spent a great time with you, mm-hmm. and they got a little fix, they got repaired, but mm-hmm. they still got to go home and fight the good fight. And so how do you, what kind of tools do you give them, like, to go home with?
Mm-hmm. So I always tell my clients, take at least 10 minutes a day to take care of yourself, whether that be reading a book, taking a shower, taking a bath, doing deep breathing, because you need to re-energize yourself, because you're going through all this, going through trauma, or just dealing with difficult situations. It's part of life. That's not going to change. It can get better, it can get worse, it can stay the same, but take time to re-energize yourself, because if you don't, you're just running on no battery.
Like your phone, if it's at 1%, I mean, mm-hmm. you can't expect the phone to go at 1% all day. It's gonna die.
Yeah.
You have to plug it in, and so I think we need to do that. Do you think social media has anything to do with that?
I think in the age of social media, we want to focus on other things. So it's really easy to go see, oh, so-and-so is living this life. And that just is like, oh, why am I not doing that? So, and then I always tell my clients, and I'll just tell anybody, you know, what they choose to post is not real life. It's just part of their life. They're not posting all the ugliness behind that, or the days that they woke up looking a mess. I know I don't post that on my Facebook.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, probably. Maybe I should. Maybe I should a little bit. People want to see the ugly side.
So, like the
realness.
Like, the realness, because reality is that everybody does not look like the Instagram models every day. They don't wake up like that. They have to put in a couple of hours of makeup and hair and all that stuff.
And so, the posing in a certain way. Oh, gosh, yeah. I saw a picture of myself, and I hated it. hated it. And everybody looked great. And I was like, you know, Sharon, just get over it. Just swipe. You know, I liked it. Kept going because we all have ugly pictures.
Yeah.
And we can't. It was just a bad shot. But now I look at it now and I laugh because it's like, it's so minute. It's so tiny. And it's the spectrum of.
And it's our perception.
Yes.
Because I went on vacation and we were taking pictures. And one of my friends took a picture of me and I didn't like it. And I was like, ugh. I hate this picture. And she's like, no, you look beautiful. I love it. So I was like laughing or something. And I was like, oh, that's not like the best. My face does not look the best there.
Okay.
But she's like, no, you look like, I love it. You look so happy. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to post it because it's probably just my own issues with self-image that are causing me to see this.
Yeah, and I think we all struggle with those things, those self-image things. I'm going to go back to therapy in the Latino community. Mm-hmm. So is there more awareness? Is it changing? How do you see it differently now compared to maybe 10 years ago?
I think it is changing. And the reason I say this is because there's more parents calling for therapy for their adult children. Like these past couple of months, I've gotten so many calls on, I want to schedule an appointment for my adult child. And I have to tell them, well, you know, I can give you information about therapy, but I need your adult to call me because they're an adult.
Yeah.
But to me, it's been fascinating how they're calling me for therapy for their adult children, not even teenagers. Yeah. So I'm like, there has to be some type of shift that they're like, okay, I see my kid needs help. Let me, like, ask for help and try to get some type of help.
And then do you see when they do they come together? Or is it one of these things, like, how do people start talking in your counseling sessions and just opening up? Because like you said, you're a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're on a podcast and this is more relaxed, but it's more like in your session, how does somebody open up? And
actually, by the time they come to counseling, I don't even have to say anything.
Oh, really?
Sometimes I'm like, wait, let's get the consent form signed. Let me know who your emergency contact is. Because you have to think, these people have been holding whatever they're holding for years. And they're just like, you're the first person I tell. And I have to honor that.
Oh,
I'm like, thank you. Like, I'm happy that you have this trust in me. And in this, like, I've created this safe space for you to tell me all this. And so I've had clients that are in their late 60s. And just carrying all this. And it's like, they start with the grandma. And I'm like, oh, it's one of those where you're going to start with, like, generational trauma. People don't kind of notice it.
Oh, yeah.
Or nobody talks about generational trauma. And I have to, like, okay.
Well, the people that are, like you said, somebody who's in their 60s, they come with what we call the silent generation.
Mm-hmm.
So the silent generation is, I forgot the years, but those were you didn't talk about anything.
Yeah.
Then you got baby boomers, and then you got Gen X, and then you got millennials, and now you have the Gen Z. So what would you say to somebody who's listening right now who maybe they are a millennial and in their short life, because you're probably young, to me, you're still a baby. You're in your 20s or 30s, you're still a baby. How would they open up about any trauma that they went through, generational trauma that they've seen, and then here they are in their 30s and it's 2019.
Yeah.
What do you see there?
Millennials open up pretty easily because of social media. Mental health has become, I follow a lot of counselors and mental health pages, so there's a lot of conversation about it now compared to like when I was growing up. And I'm a millennial,
right.
But I didn't see all that. Social media was just starting as well.
And it's still, if you think about it, it's really a still new platform.
It is.
It really is. It's not that old. I think it is. I think, too, what happens is once you start opening up, you can tell the wrong people in your family that you're seeing therapy because they're going to think, like, well, what's wrong? Just get over it.
Yeah.
I've been told that all my life. Why are you depressed? What are you depressed about? And you try and explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice do you have for somebody who's maybe listening and they're scared, they want to see a therapist, but they also don't know, they don't want to get made fun of in the family?
Well, you don't have to tell your family.
True.
So you could set that boundary and limits. We don't have to tell our family everything about us.
Mm-mm.
We pick and choose who we tell certain things because we know, like, what that person is going to tell us. So if I know that I have a tia that's going to be like, no, it's because you're crazy, or what's wrong with you? You're making such a big deal about it. You know what? I don't need to tell you. So setting those limits and boundaries. Sometimes, especially in the Latino community, we're so family focused. And then, I don't know what happens in your family, but my family, one person knows and tells other person.
Oh, nombre. They're like,
everybody finds out.
You know what I call them? They're called the flying monkeys. Remember in The Wizard of Oz?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. That's an old, old movie.
Yeah, I remember.
But remember when she's flying out in the broom and all the monkeys are flying mm-hmm. out with her?
Yeah.
So those are the flying monkeys. And they're going to go and they're going to do a smear campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to tell. And by the time they repeat your story, it's not even the same story that was originally told.
Mm-hmm.
So
it, like, you don't have to tell them.
Right.
Or if you do tell them, you have the, like, power to say, you know what? I respect your opinion, but this is what I know about therapy. And this is how it's helped me.
Ah.
So educate them, because sometimes it comes from a lack of education, ignorance maybe.
Right.
So take that opportunity to say, I respect what you're saying and I respect your belief. But this is my belief, and you have to respect it, too. So putting that limit and those boundaries in there, too.
You know, yesterday, my son, my 11-year-old, I picked him up, and we were talking about something, and the word belief came up. When mm-hmm. somebody has a belief, you know, mm-hmm. they believe in this, they believe in that. And I said, do you know what the word belief, the definition of the word belief, look it up.
Mm-hmm.
It means idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a real thing. It's an idea. A belief is an idea. But some people think a belief is like engraved in stone. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the word.
This is what it is.
This is what it is. But really, it's an idea. Mm-hmm. You can respect somebody's idea. You can respect someone's belief. And so I like how you put that into perspective. Do you see more female counselors or do you see more male counselors? Clients.
Clients.
Sorry.
I see more female clients. I have a couple of male clients, but usually it's couple therapy. So they come in for couple therapy. But the majority of my clients are female. My teenagers are mainly male, though.
You know, I was talking to another friend of mine who's a therapist, mm-hmm. and she's saying now you're seeing more young males come forward.
Mm-hmm.
High school, college, that mm-hmm. their girlfriends are beating them up.
Yeah.
They're getting even raped. And you're like, how the hell can that happen? How can a woman do that? So, I mean, let's talk on that. That's a so deep subject.
Men are victims of domestic violence too. They just don't talk about it because there's a big stigma on it. It's like, you're a man. You're supposed to be strong, big. You shouldn't be like, take shit for anybody, especially a woman. So how are you going to speak on, hey, my significant other is beating up on me?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, for anybody hearing, I used to work at the Bridge over Troubled Waters, which is a woman's shelter in, and I'm doing the quotation marks. In Pasadena. But while I was there, we took our first man in with his children because he was a victim of domestic violence.
Wow.
So there is help out there. It's just a lot of people like think domestic violence and women. They don't think about the men. So their shelters will take in men. At least I know the Bridge will. So there is
change because there's we're humans. I don't care, you know, and like mm-hmm. oh, you know, men aren't supposed to cry. Hello, they have tears and they have emotions, and yeah, if mm-hmm. you're not crying, if you don't have, then you're broken.
I tell my clients sometimes, because they're in there and I can see them holding back the emotion. I'm like, tell me what that's about. Like, doesn't it hurt to hold back your tears?
But
and I'm like, because I know it hurts me. If I like hold my tears, my throat will start hurting. I'll just have pain.
Yeah.
And I told them, it's okay. You're in a safe place. Just let it out. Anybody cries. Everybody cries. Regardless of who you are, when you came into this world, what did you do?
You got slapped on the ass.
Two
guys cried. Yeah,
yeah.
Everybody. I know, that's a horrible thing. I don't know. I don't think they do that anymore. I had a C-section with my kid, but because he was upside down. What do you call mm-hmm. it? When the breech.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've seen all those old movies where they like spank the baby on the butt and mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, that's what we do.
So I don't know if this is right because I'm not a doctor, but I read that the reason they need the baby to cry is to develop their lungs and get the air like going.
I read that too. I don't know.
So if you think about it, if we come out an evolutionary, like we need to cry to survive. So think about that as an adult.
That's very deep. You're gonna make me cry now. No, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm very emotional. I get emotional so easy.
It's okay to cry.
So this is the crying podcast. Just kidding. So another thing that you wanted to talk about in the Latino community is not just the stigma. Is it the lack of resources, you think? Like, where do you go find that bilingual counselor? They just don't know where to go?
Okay. One is they don't know where to go.
Right.
We're not that many that speak Spanish. And there's a definitely lack of resources. I mean, counseling is not cheap. So let's say, yes, I want to go to counseling.
I mean, some of it's not even covered by insurance.
Mm-mm. Sometimes it's like insurance, like, oh, that diagnosis isn't covered.
Man, who makes those freaking rules?
I have no idea.
It's just bullshit.
It is. So there's a lot of lack of resources. Fortunately, living in Houston, we're such a big city that we have a lot of different resources.
Yeah,
there's
like more progressive.
Yeah. So you have like El Centro de Corazón, Legacy Clinic. Like it used to be MHMRA. I don't know, the Harris Center now.
Right.
So they have all these resources they can go to. There's also Latinx Therapy. .com. It's a directory that has nothing but Latinx therapists. So I don't know if they're all bilingual, but you can search on there.
You can find someone there. Yeah, that speaks Spanish and English.
They're a nationwide directory.
Oh, wow.
So if you're not from Houston and you want to look for a counselor or a therapist,
right,
just log on latinxtherapy.com and they can find somebody there.
Mm. So you're seeing right now there are couples.
Mm-hmm.
Teenagers
and adults.
Mm-hmm. But the adults that come in, they are coming in with their adult children and themselves. Is that kind of like you were saying?
It kind of depends. Sometimes I have where the adult children are like, my mom needs help. And I'm like, well, mom needs to make an appointment, but they'll bring them. Because I don't know about you, but I know my mom is like, I don't know how to get there, take me. And I'm like, okay, I'll take you, but I can't bring you all the time. So it's like with new things, I'm like, okay, let's go. And kind of be that support. Especially we're such a collectivistic society, culture,
mm-hmm.
You need that support. And there's nothing wrong. I'm like, okay, hi, this is my name. I introduce myself. And
right.
I'm like, you're like, whatever family member is right. Good hands, but I need you to wait outside. Because this is confidential. And they're like, okay. And then, yeah, they wait outside. And then next time, it's not as scary to come see the therapist.
Right.
So they'll come on their own. So, yeah, sometimes I have whole family come.
You know, and it's so funny because I remember we're at the crossroads where, I don't know if we're called like the more generation. We're not as family oriented. I shouldn't even say that. But we're not like, we don't do everything with the family because we're in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of our family is either in, you know, Brownsville, Corpus Christi, Austin, Chicago,
mm-hmm.
California, North Carolina. My family's all spread out.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do something here, it's like, it's just me and him. That's mm-hmm. it. We don't have that big group, like, but we grew up with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we left and started our lives here. So
mm-hmm.
we're kind of like that new, what do we call that? We're not as, we don't bring the whole familia when we have a problem. Like, we just figure it out on our own together.
Mm-hmm. Kind of just evolving.
It is an involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always letting my kids know, look, if you need help mentally, you know, let me know.
Because
mm-hmm. it's easy to get broken.
Yeah.
It's easy to walk around a broken human
mm-hmm.
working.
There's so many broken humans. But you don't have to be broken forever.
No. And this brokenness, again, another good question is, when you said it stems from childhood, or mm-hmm. do you think it comes from maybe just that they met the wrong person? They could have met the wrong person in their 20s or 30s, and then they became broken.
Yeah. It could happen at any stage of life. You could have a perfect childhood, a perfect adulthood, and then something happens when you're in, like, an elder. Or you could have, like, a messed up childhood, but then life turns out great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just depends on a lot of different factors. So
what do you see as an underlying similarity for people that are strong enough to repair themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with some therapy with you, but
mm-hmm.
then they are able to take those tools and, you know, what is the underlying, I guess, what do they have that someone else doesn't have? Like, what is it that you think made them go stronger?
Being able to ask for help. A lot of us can't do that. So just being able to, like, acknowledge, okay, I'm not mm-hmm. perfect, I need help. And that's okay. It's okay to ask for help. There's nothing wrong with asking for help.
Somewhere along the lines, we just
somebody told us that it wasn't. I don't know where I heard the message, but I know I got it because I struggle with it.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Like, you're not perfect. As humans, there's, like, perfect doesn't exist.
Right.
We want it to exist.
There's no such thing.
And what I tell people is that you set yourself up for failure because you have this image you're never going to reach. So don't set, like, this whatever it is up for perfection, because you're going to be miserable. Do you want to be miserable your whole life? Keep on doing what you have to do to get that perfect whatever.
Whatever. And also the striving for happiness. I strive for contentment. I don't know, those are two different words. Mm-hmm. But the word, and I have the word happiness in my book, you know, middle finger happiness, but it wouldn't have been middle finger contentment. Mm-hmm. But the word really is contentment. We need to learn to be content. Mm-hmm. Happiness comes in waves. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you just need to be happy. Just put a smile on. And it's like, you know.
It doesn't
work like that. I have a friend of mine who has something that he's going through. And if you saw him during the day, he's got a smile. Everything's great. He's mm-hmm. moving and going. But when he gets home, it's like, boom, just shuts down.
It's a mask.
It's a mask. But it's also like he gave so much energy mm-hmm. to be a happy person during the day. So mm-hmm. by the time he gets home, it's like dinner and go to bed. Like, you got to reboot. Mm-hmm. Is that normal? Is that something that people that struggle with depression do?
Yeah, because
it takes a lot.
Yeah, it does take a lot. Because you see all these like famous people that like died by suicide. So it's like they were happy. They're like, I would have never known that they were depressed. Depression doesn't have a face.
It doesn't.
You could be, other people can like see you as being happy and outgoing, but that's a mask. Mm-hmm. You don't know what, like, in reality, behind like four walls, what's going on.
True. So true.
So that's another whole topic.
Dude, we have to come back in December. We're going to come back for the holidays and do that, because for me, as I've gotten older, I've had to reinvent our holiday. Like, we celebrate it a little bit differently than everyone. Oh, I'm sure it's that it's differently. We just had to create our own happy holiday because mm-hmm. we're such a spread out family. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed that sometimes too, depression kicks in for the holidays. Mm-hmm. It's Christmas. I have the hardest time with Thanksgiving. Different. Mm-hmm. That's mashed potato butt. Like, I love to
comfort food,
you know, but there's something about the holidays. It's just, I don't know. It's just like, I really have to protect my energy mm-hmm. and work on myself those last 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. do you see more people after the new year because of that? Or just before we let mm-hmm. the podcast kind of roll, but do you see people more after the new year?
I see them more after the new year. But what I do notice is that it's something called seasonal depression.
Yeah, sad. So, SAD. Yeah. Yes.
So that's an actual thing. Mm-hmm. And it happens because a lot of reasons, but somebody said it's probably because there's less sun and we need vitamin D. Sun makes vitamin D. If we don't have vitamin D, that could cause depression. So depression can be caused by multiple things.
What's the difference between, oh, I'm just having a sad day versus I'm depressed? Because there's those are two different things.
Yeah. So we all have sad days. I tell everybody, I'm like, don't expect to be happy every day, because that's not realistic. That's not life. You have thousands of emotions you're going to go through. You might cycle through them.
And not just women. Hello, people. Oh, she's just on the rag or she's on a period. No.
No. Men go through it too.
They do.
So the difference between sadness and depression is sadness can last a couple of hours, a day or two. Depression, it's sadness combined with a lack of motivation.
Anxiety.
It could also have anxiety combined with you don't want to do like the things that you used to like to do. For example, I know you like running.
Yeah.
Let's say you have like this 1 or 2 weeks where you're like, I don't want to run anymore.
Yeah, and that's happened before. Yeah. I have to really push myself.
So it has a lot of other factors. It's not just sadness.
Right.
So it's a combination of other symptoms.
And sometimes it's just a trigger. Mm-hmm. explain to our readers, our listeners, what's a trigger? What is it when somebody says, oh, I got triggered today?
So that's
my son says that. He came home when he was in fifth grade. He was like, yeah, my friend Carl got triggered. And I'm like, I never said that when I was 11. My friend got triggered.
Mm-hmm. So a trigger is something that happens that causes something to happen in you.
Okay.
For example, a trigger for me to get upset is traffic. And they cut me off. I'm like, digo hasta lo que no debo decir, because I'm just like, ugh.
Oh no, when I'm in traffic, everybody is a motherfucker. I can get out of the car in Target and wave at you, and I'm like, I just called you a motherfucker. But he's like, and it makes me feel better. And that's the next question. We're going to finish this one because I have the other one about strong language. But
so it's triggers. Just, it's something that causes, like, it impacts you in a certain way. For example, we have, there's something that, a trigger for our veterans. When people don't, like, they don't see that fireworks is a trigger for some veterans because it sounds like the bombs and, like, war and stuff. That's why they say, okay, I'll see people post, oh, veteran here, please don't use fireworks, things like that. So it's something that kind of reminds you of either a trauma that happened or it takes you to a bad place.
It could even just be a sentence or a word.
Yeah.
And I've done it. My husband will say something and it just, oh my God, pissed me off. But then he's like, wait a minute, because you were told that growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I have to remind myself, I'm not that little kid anymore. Oh God, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. So once you start connecting the dots, you realize that's where the trigger was.
Yeah, it kind of brings back an emotion.
Mm-hmm. It does.
So it's like whatever the trigger is connected to an emotion, and it will remind you of that. It's like when you smell something, and it goes like that memory, and it'll be a good memory or a bad memory.
Yeah, like when the tortillas are coming off the oven. God. That reminds me of my great-great-grandmother.
Yeah.
My great-grandmother, and she would be flipping them. Yeah, so you have those triggers. So I wanted to also circle back around. So strong language versus bad language. And I have a friend of mine, Summer Watson, who's a PhD that wrote this book called Fuck Yeah, Get Real with Strong Language. But why is it that you see more of us using strong language versus bad language? Because you said it feels good to tell somebody to fuck off. And you're like, oh, we're not supposed to say that. You hold it in. Mm-hmm. And then you're like this bomb that's going to blow up.
Yeah, and it's worse.
Well, I read, correct me if I'm wrong, people who curse more, we let it go. We don't hold that stress in. Like, that shit's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you're actually even more of a trustworthy friend or trustworthy person. Because I'm going to bullshit you. Mm-hmm. Versus that person's trying to be like super, you know, watch their P's and Q's. They don't want to say anything bad.
Yeah.
So what do you see that as a counselor?
Mm-hmm.
The strong language versus bad language. Because it's not bad. It's just strong language.
I have to give people permission to do it. Because,
What?
I have to tell my... I tell my clients, it's okay if you cuss. Especially I have a group of clients that are older than me. And they're like, oh, I don't want to cuss in front of you. I'm like, it's okay. Trust me, I've heard like worse things than what you're... And it's like silly words that I don't even think they're cuss words.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Like, it's like pendejo. I'm like...
Oh, that's not even a cuss word.
Yeah.
Right? I'm talking like... I have a list of them.
Yeah. So I have to give people permission because, like you said, they feel like, oh, I can't say that. But once they say it, and it's like... I could see their body go like relax and like, oh, that's a burden off of me because I was able to say it. I'm like, yeah, it was like, it's just me and you. I'm not going to go tell anybody that what you said, what you're talking about.
It's just a form of communication. And, you know, it's funny. I noticed if I can't be myself like that around people, I didn't do that when I was younger because you brought up that that's...
It's inappropriate.
It's inappropriate. Maldichos. No, you don't talk like that. You're a lady. And then you get to a certain point, you're like, you know what? Fuck everybody. This is... Not that I'm walking around saying the F-bomb for every other word, but in certain situations where you know...
No
other word fits. And then there's some words that even the word fuck isn't strong enough. I'm like, I don't even know of another one, you know, that's even stronger than that. I have a bunch of them. So before we wrap this up, we were talking about triggers. I took a note here, PTSD. Do you see a lot of that in your counseling?
Yes.
Okay.
So much.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So PTSD, if you don't know what that stands for, it's post-traumatic stress disorder. And if you've gone through a trauma and maybe, for example, you and your friend went through the same thing, that does not mean both of you will have PTSD. So because the perception of life and events is different for everybody. So let's say you were in a car crash and you and your friend were in a car crash and he's fine, and but you weren't driving, but you kind of just have like not able to drive, kind of you see a car move and you kind of tense up. Just all these different things that are part of PTSD, and it doesn't have to be a car accident. It's so many things that we go through, and it's actually more common than you think, because it's just people don't go to get officially diagnosed.
Well, you can get PTSD from verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
people understand that.
And yeah, and verbal abuse is real. People think, oh, that, what's that saying when we were a kid? I was a kid. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words would never hurt me.
Oh, that's wrong.
That's such a lie, because yeah. I found in my experience that verbal abuse has such a stronger impact than mm-hmm. physical abuse.
Yeah.
And I tell people, the physical abuse, the bruises, the broken bones, that heals and you don't see it anymore.
Right.
But it's so much harder to heal.
Yeah.
Like verbal abuse and psychological abuse.
I'm a victim of that from my mom. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if she listens or anybody in my family listens, but coming out, every time I talk about it, it helps me and it helps someone else who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think, oh, but that's your family. You know, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to talk to them, like
no,
you said.
No, no.
It's tu mama or it's tu papa. You could have had that bad situation with your father mm-hmm. or your mother mm-hmm. or a brother or a sister mm-hmm. or an aunt or an uncle.
Yeah,
you know. So, yeah, I think it's amazing what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. If you have family that hurt you, you don't. It's not like a rule that's written in stone that you have to talk to them. You could put a boundary and say, you know, I'm not going to allow you to do this. If you're going to continue to do it, I don't need you in my life. It doesn't matter if they're family. You have the ability to put that boundary and say no.
Cut them off. That's it. Yeah. They're done. And it's no more, no mas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing more and more of that now.
Mm-hmm.
And more of that is being accepted. Before, mm-hmm. if you did that, even 15 years ago, if you said, oh, yeah, I don't talk to this person anymore because mm-hmm. they're terrible.
Yeah.
No, how could you do that? You know, or, oh, you got to forgive them. Well, you can forgive them, but doesn't mean you go back and keep getting.
And it's like you're letting them hurt you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't have to let somebody hurt you. You can put that limit and that boundary and say, you know, you can't cross this line. And if you cross it, there's going to be consequences. And if that consequence is you being out of my life, that's your decision, not mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, yeah. People mm-hmm. just don't realize that we have more power than we realize.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, and when you say, oh, it's all up in your head, it is all up in our head.
It is
up in our head. Well, so I am so thrilled that you were here, and I just enjoy this, and I hope everybody got something out of this. I hope somebody took notes. I was taking notes. Where can people follow you? Do you have, I know you've got the podcast mm-hmm. that's coming soon, but
yeah.
Where can people reach out to you?
So they can reach out to me on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
My handle is A Bilingual Counselor. It's also my website, abilingualcounselor.com. And then the podcast page, which I'm working on, it's under construction,
That's
is Oye Let's Talk. So Oye is O-Y-E, then Let's Talk.
Love it. I mm-hmm. love it. Well, I think it's just brilliant that you were here today and amazing. And I'm just... It just everything connected, even though we had the crap rain come in here. Okay, well, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
You will have to come back. Again, this is Sharon, and my guest Sol, who is in here as a counselor. I hope this helps somebody today. It's Friday. I want you to go have a great weekend. And if you have any questions, you can reach me at middlefingerhappiness@gmail.com. Peace out. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.